She was more than a rebel. She was a storm in bare feet. Queen Nanny of the Maroons led warriors through mist-drenched mountains, caught bullets with her hands, or so the British believed, and carved a sovereign nation from the jaws of slavery. No portrait survives, yet her face is everywhere. They tried to erase her. She became a myth. They tried to contain her. She became a spirit. This is not just the story of Jamaica's only national heroine. This is the story of a woman who turned memory into fire, and fire into freedom. Welcome to the History of the Caribbeans podcast. If you haven't already, please consider following us on your favorite podcast platform. Today, we present to you Nanny of the Maroons, A Journey Through Time, Episode 4. Let's dive into this thrilling narrative together. Chapter 13, Between Earth and Ancestors. There are some who vanish when they die, and then there are those who multiply. When Queen Nanny crossed beyond the veil, when her breath stilled and her voice fell silent, it did not mark her disappearance. It marked her expansion. She did not leave her people. She became woven into them, into the hills, into the rivers, into the soil that bled when maroon feet touched it. Nanny did not pass away. She passed through, and what she left behind was not just legend, but presence, raw, vibrating, sacred. This chapter is not about her death. This is about her becoming. 1. Her name in the wind. In the days following the last ritual, Moortown did not weep as other villages did. They moved slower, yes. Their steps were softer, their words fewer. But there was no mourning in the way the world expected, because the people knew she was not gone. When the wind passed through the trees and rustled banana leaves just before dawn, it carried her voice. When the water in the spring swirled in unexpected spirals, it was her spirit bathing. When a child danced without instruction during drum circle, everyone knew it was Mama Nanny moving through them. There was no need for statues. Her monument was motion. Her tomb was the entire mountain. 2. Ancestral dreams. The first sign came through the children. In their sleep, they began to speak. They whispered words no one had taught them. Ancient tongues from the Ashanti Highlands. Battle chants. Names of warriors who had long passed. One child, a girl named Yolani, woke screaming one night, her body covered in sweat. But her eyes were focused, clear. She looked at her grandmother and said, "Mama Nanny says the forest is hungry. Plant again. Dig deeper." That season, they planted yams farther uphill, where no one had before. The yield tripled. Coincidence, some said. Faith, others replied. But the truth was known. Nanny was not a memory. She was a force. 3. The songs that returned. Months after her crossing, the village drum circles began to shift. Drummers who had played the same rhythms for years found their hands moving differently. New beats, new progressions, but familiar, ancient. It was as if the ancestors were returning through the rhythm. Nanny had once said, "The drum is the tongue of the mountain." Now, the mountain was speaking fluently. Songs once thought lost to time came back in fragments. A chorus here, a verse there. Together, they reconstructed the chants of the old Ashanti mothers, the freedom prayers sung on slave ships, the lullabies woven in resistance and pain. And when they sang them together, something shifted in the air. A heaviness lifted. An energy pulsed through the circle. Nanny's breath, her heartbeat, still drumming. 4. Guardians of her spirit. A group of women, 7 in number, took it upon themselves to guard her legacy. They called themselves the Root Mothers. Each one had served Nanny personally in different stages of her life, as scouts, as herbalists, as warriors, as daughters of the flame. They wore red beads around their wrists. They did not marry. They walked the perimeter of Moortown every sunrise, whispering blessings into the trees. They tended her sacred mat with fresh herbs. They taught the children her chants, her philosophies, her pauses, her silences. One of them, Adana, began to have visions. "She walks at dusk," she said, "near the ridge above the yam fields. She is not alone. She walks with all who crossed." Adana stopped speaking soon after and became mute. but her silence became a new form of storytelling. They say she speaks only to the dead now, or the divine, or both. 5. The questions she left behind. Her absence brought questions. If the war was over, what now? What does freedom become once it is no longer hunted? Without Nanny's physical presence to lead, the people looked inward. They began to debate leadership succession, structure, ritual. Some wanted council. Others wanted a single heir, someone to inherit Nanny's role. But when they dug beneath her hut, where she once slept, they found a small clay tablet. On it, etched by hand, were the words, "I leave no crown. I leave a mirror. Look into it and lead." It was not a riddle. It was a call to become her, all of them. 6. The forest as cathedral. The trees surrounding Moore Town grew taller, thicker, more intertwined. Paths once clear became overgrown within days. New routes appeared. The forest was alive in ways it hadn't been before. Elders began to say that Nanny's spirit was reshaping the land, rebuilding the defense system, protecting the village in ways beyond sight. Hunters reported hearing singing in the deepest parts of the forest, where no human foot had walked in generations. A woman gathering herbs stumbled upon a clearing where the air shimmered like heat. Within it, she saw a red cloth tied to a branch. When she stepped forward, the cloth vanished. They began calling it the Shadow Grove, a sacred space, forbidden, blessed, protected. 7. Her presence in ceremony. Every major Maroon ritual, births, naming ceremonies, marriages, plantings, even punishments, began with a pause. An invocation, a moment of silence for Nanny. And in that silence, they often heard something. A drum in the distance. A breeze that arrived from nowhere. A flicker in the candle's flame. No one dared speak her name casually. It was reserved for moments of meaning. If a child was particularly brave, they said, "You have her flame." If a woman survived childbirth after complications, they said, "She stood beside you." If a warrior returned from a hunt, unharmed despite danger, they whispered, "She walked ahead of you." 8. Resistance by remembrance. Even as the British tried to erase her from official records, the Maroons kept her alive in story. And not just in Moore Town. Across Jamaica, tales of Queen Nanny's spirit spread like ash on the wind. Runaway slaves who had never met her claimed to have seen a woman in red leading them through the woods. British soldiers, long after the treaties, swore they felt watched when passing through the Blue Mountains. One claimed he saw her face reflected in the river, smiling. He deserted his post the next day and vanished into the hills. Some say he joined the Maroons. Others say he was claimed by her spirit. 9. Her legacy as living architecture. The entire structure of Moore Town became a kind of living shrine. The village layout shifted slightly over time, shaped by dreams, instincts, and memory. Huts moved closer together. Paths curved naturally toward the sacred spring. The drum circle expanded. A new center was built, not a church, not a hall, but a circular open space called the Fire Heart, where people came not just to speak, but to listen, to Nanny, to each other, to themselves. And at the center of the Fire Heart, embedded in the ground, was a single stone etched with three symbols. A root, a flame, an eye, rooted in the past, burning in the present, awake to the future. Queen Nanny was no longer flesh. She was the in-between, the space between breath and silence, between night and morning, between rage and peace. She became not only a chapter in history, but a force in the present, a living ancestor, a bridge between worlds, between earth and ancestors. Chapter 14, echoes through generations. A name whispered enough times does not fade, it amplifies. It becomes a current under the skin, a force that moves silently through generations until it erupts into action, into defiance, into art, into song. Queen Nanny had left the earth behind. Yes, but she had not left her people. Instead, she multiplied across bloodlines, across syllables, across rebellions and revolutions, until she became everyone who stood up and refused to kneel. This chapter is not just about remembrance. It is about inheritance. because Nanny did not die. She became the marrow of resistance. 1. The voice in the plantations. Even after her passing, the cane fields continued to bleed. Slavery remained a brutal, inescapable reality for hundreds of thousands across Jamaica. The British continued their machinery of profit, turning human backs into currency. But wherever men and women toiled under the lash, Nanny's name traveled. She was whispered about under moonlight, behind huts, at riverbanks, while washing. She was not always spoken of as a person, but as a presence, a red spirit, a barefoot woman with ash on her skin and a machete in her hand. Some claimed to have seen her, a figure watching from the edge of a cane field, a pair of eyes glowing in the bush, a song humming in the wind just before a plantation fire mysteriously erupted in the dead of night. Slave owners dismissed these stories as superstition, but enslaved people believed, and belief in the absence of freedom is power. 2. Revolts in her name. Across the island, from St. James to Clarendon, uprisings would shake the earth. The 1760 Takis Rebellion, though led by a powerful Akan warrior, drew heavily from the stories of Nanny. His followers, many Ashanti themselves, invoked her name before striking. They believed she was with them, guiding their movements in the dark. Afterward, when the rebellion was crushed, British accounts noted something strange. A red cloth had been tied to a tree in the center of the rebel camp. No one knew who put it there, but the Maroons did. They recognized her symbol. Nanny's voice was still stirring warriors, still summoning resistance, even after her death. 3. The daughters she never birthed. Nanny had no recorded biological children, but she had daughters, thousands of them, women who rose from pain and turned it into flame. They fought quietly in homes, nursing stolen children back to life. They fought openly in markets, using gossip as a weapon of revolution. They hid escaped slaves in their huts, passed messages in baskets of cassava, smuggled maps beneath skirts, blessed soldiers with bush medicine, spoke in tongues under their breath when white men passed, confusing their enemies with prophecy. And when they were asked where they learned to be so fearless, they would answer, "Nanny walks with me," for memory in the mouth. One of the most powerful tools of the Maroon people was oral tradition. Stories were not merely entertainment. They were weapons. And through these stories, Nanny lived on. Her battles were told in great detail, with firelight casting shadows across children's faces. Her songs were taught in secret to girls, who would sing them during labor to protect their babies. Even the rhythm of footsteps, three soft, one hard, was passed down as her signature approach to enemy lines. When the British tried to erase her from textbooks, the people carved her into breath. Her memory was never written. It was spoken, and in being spoken, it stayed alive. 5. Cultural reclamation. Centuries later, when the chains were finally broken and slavery was abolished, the story of Nanny shifted again. She became a symbol of identity, of black pride, of womanhood unbowed. In newly freed Jamaica, where the psychological wounds of colonization still stung, cultural leaders began to reach back into the past, to reclaim what had been hidden or stolen. Nanny became the root. She was invoked in poetry, painted in murals, woven into school rhymes and independent speeches. Her face, never captured in life, was imagined again and again in red, black, and gold. Artists drew her catching bullets with her hands. Children dressed as her during national festivals. Elders wore red head wraps in her memory. And even those who had never read a book about her knew her name. She had become culture. 6. The Windward Echo. In Moortown, her spirit continued to shape the community. Though centuries had passed, the sacred spaces she once walked remained untouched. New leaders rose, elders who governed not through dominance, but by channeling her method, listening, guiding, remembering. The abang still blew at dawn. The rituals remained. Children were still told, "Don't lie near Nanny's rock, for the spirits would know." And on special nights, when the moon was full and the drumming thickened the air, elders would say the veil between worlds was thin, and if you were worthy, you might feel her pass beside you like a breeze warmed by memory. 7. Political Awakening. By the mid-20th century, as Jamaica marched toward independence, Nanny's name took on a sharper edge. She became not just an ancestral spirit, but a revolutionary symbol. Activists and intellectuals began studying her leadership style. Women's rights groups invoked her name when demanding space and voice. Black consciousness movements, inspired by leaders like Marcus Garvey and later Rastafari prophets, held her up as proof that Jamaican resistance was rooted in something far older than colonial history. She was not a reaction to slavery. She was a blueprint for liberation. And in 1975, Jamaica made it official. Queen Nanny was declared a national hero, the only woman among 7 men. But even that title, some say, felt small for her, because Nanny had never fought for titles. She fought for freedom. 8. Her echoes in the modern world. Today, her legacy continues not just in monuments or bills, but in people. She lives in the activist who blocks a bulldozer from sacred maroon land, in the mother teaching her daughter to wrap her hair with pride, in the teacher who explains resistance before alphabet, in the poet who weaves her name into verses meant to shatter silence, in the protester who screams in the streets that land is still sacred, in the spiritualist who speaks to rivers before drinking, in the child who feels brave for no reason and later learns they carry her blood. She lives in you. If you've ever looked at oppression and said, "Not here, not again." 9. The echo that won't stop. They tried to kill her body. They tried to erase her story. They tried to rewrite her meaning. But Nanny was a root too deep to uproot. A drumbeat too loud to silence. An echo too powerful to fade. And so she continues. Not as a relic. Not as folklore. But as inheritance. As blood turned into purpose. As a whisper in the soul of everyone brave enough to resist. Chapter 15. A National Heroine. To be declared a national hero is to be engraved in stone, spoken in schools, etched onto currency. It is to be raised above the dust of time and preserved as legacy. But for Nanny of the Maroons, such a title, though long overdue, was always a contradiction. Because Nanny never fought for recognition. She fought for freedom. And for most of her life, that meant staying invisible to those who ruled and unforgettable to those who resisted. She was the whisper in the forest, not the speech in Parliament. The spirit in the drum, not the figure in a textbook. The fire in the blood, not the bronze on a pedestal. And yet, in 1975, nearly 2 centuries after her death, the government of independent Jamaica did what the British could never bring themselves to do. They named her a national hero, the 7th, the only woman. And finally, the red cloth was lifted high above the nation, no longer in rebellion, but in reverence. 1. The path to recognition. The road to Nanny's national elevation was not paved easily. For decades after independence in 1962, Jamaica struggled with its colonial past and its need to shape a new national identity. It was a time of deep questioning. Who are we without Britain? What do we value? Who do we remember? The government created a pantheon of heroes, figures who represented Jamaican resistance, intellect, and transformation. Paul Bogle, Sam Sharp, George William Gordon, Marcus Garvey, Norman Manley, Alexander Bustamante. All men, powerful, important, revolutionary, but incomplete. Where was the woman who bled for the land? The one who led armies barefoot? The one who turned bamboo into blades and dreams into rebellion? The call for Nanny's inclusion came from below, from grassroots educators, historians, feminists, and cultural custodians who had long told her story in kitchens, riverbanks, and backrooms. They reminded the nation, "You do not truly know yourself until you name your mothers." 2. The Official Declaration. In 1975, under Prime Minister Michael Manley, the Jamaican government declared Queen Nanny of the Maroons a national hero. The citation read, "For her role as leader of the Windward Maroons, for her military genius and spiritual power, and for her role in preserving the sovereignty and culture of her people in the face of overwhelming odds." But how do you capture a legend in a few sentences? How do you honor someone who had no written records, no portrait, no grave, only echoes, footprints and mist, stories passed by firelight? And yet, there she was, enshrined in law, immortalized in the national consciousness. 3. Nanny on the $500 bill. Not long after, her face was chosen for the $500 Jamaican dollar note. No one knew what she truly looked like. There were no surviving portraits, no sketches from British archives. So they imagined her. Strong, regal, bareheaded or wrapped in red cloth, eyes like flint, posture like stone. Her likeness on the note became more than just a symbol of value. It was a message. To every child who held that bill, she was a reminder. We are not descended from cowards. We are descended from fire. And yet, there was controversy. Some asked, was it right to place a woman who rejected empire onto state-issued currency? Would she have agreed to be commodified? Or was this, in its own way, a final form of reclamation? No one could answer for certain. But one thing was clear. Nanny had never belonged to institutions. Now they belonged to her. 4. Politics and myth. As her image rose, so too did attempts to frame her legacy. Different political parties tried to claim her. Activists called her the mother of Jamaican feminism. Educators called her the founding general of black sovereignty. Spiritualists called her a deity. Historians, skeptical of myth, tried to pin her down in timelines, cross-referencing oral accounts with plantation records and military reports. But Nanny refused to be flattened. She had always lived at the border between fact and flame. To reduce her to a statistic was to miss the point. She was both historical and spiritual, flesh and legend, leader and symbol, warrior and womb. 5. What it meant to the Maroons. For the descendants of Moortown and other Maroon settlements, the national recognition came with both pride and tension. Pride, because finally, the world was seeing what they had always known. Tension, because they had always held her sacred. And now she was being shared. To them, Nanny was more than a symbol. She was their ancestor, their protector, their law. They continued to perform her rituals privately, speak her name only in moments of reverence, and teach her legacy with depth, not just pageantry. There were fears that the national title might turn her into folklore, flatten her into tourism slogans or sanitized schoolbook chapters. So they fought back with preservation. They rebuilt her ceremonial spaces. They trained young women in ancestral rites. They taught the unwritten Nanny. And in doing so, they kept her flame from being diluted. 6. Nanny in the classroom. In the decades that followed, Nanny's name entered every Jamaican schoolbook. Children were taught about her resistance, her guerrilla tactics, her spiritual power, her wisdom. But not all lessons were equal. In some schools, she was softened, reduced to a mere military leader. In others, she was revered, but misunderstood. Some teachers taught her with fire in their voice. Others simply skimmed the paragraph. A few brave educators went further, bringing in oral historians, elders from Moortown, Maroon drummers, storytellers who could summon her memory through rhythm and voice. In those classrooms, students felt her presence. They didn't just learn about her. They met her. 7. The uneasy honor. With national heroism came something Nanny never asked for, expectation. She was now a symbol of Jamaican strength, womanhood, and identity. But symbols can be distorted. Some tried to use her image while ignoring her truth. They wore red cloth without knowing what it meant. They spoke her name in ceremony, but betrayed her values in policy. They praised her in speeches, then neglected the Maroon land she protected. And so, again, the people rose. Historians, artists, activists, all demanded that honoring Nanny meant more than celebration. It meant action. Preserve the land. Honor the treaties. Empower women. Teach the truth. Because the greatest disrespect would be to turn her into decoration while erasing what she truly stood for. Sovereignty. Resistance. Spiritual protection, memory, rebellion as birthright. 8. Nanny in the modern struggle. Today, the name Nanny continues to echo across Jamaica and the diaspora. She is invoked in anti-colonial protests, maroon land defense, women's rights movements, Afrocentric education, cultural renaissance festivals, spiritual circles that channel African ancestral energy. She is not a relic. She is a force field, a firewall, a red thread woven through time that binds generations of Black women who dare to lead, love, and liberate. And every time someone asks, "Who gave you permission to be this bold, this brave, this loud, this wild?" the answer echoes, "Nanny." To call her a national hero is not wrong, but it is also not enough, because Nanny was more than Jamaican. She was universal. She belongs to every freedom fighter who sings into silence, to every girl who chooses strength over silence, to every rebel who would rather be spirit than slave. She is not just Jamaica's heroine. She is the world's reminder that freedom, once awakened, will never sleep again. Chapter 16. The Spirit of Nanny Lives On. Not all fires burn out. Some pass from hand to hand, breath to breath, womb to womb, until the flame becomes something more than light. It becomes life. And in the hills of Jamaica, in the rhythm of drums, in the eyes of every girl born with defiance in her bones and soil in her soul, the spirit of Nanny lives on. This is not a story that ends with death. It ends with awakening. 1. The drums still speak. In the stillness before dawn, when the fog rolls over Moortown and the world holds its breath between dream and daylight, the drums begin. They do not start with thunder. They begin with memory. A single pulse. Then another. Then a rhythm older than language. It is not performance. It is not ritual for show. It is communion. The drummers, descendants of warriors and healers, do not simply play. They listen. They wait for the spirit to enter. They say that when the rhythm is right, the ancestors arrive. And sometimes, Nanny walks through them. You do not see her. You feel her. The hairs on your arm rise. Your eyes tear for no reason. You sway, then fall into trance. And just like that, she is speaking again, without words, without form, but as real as wind across the cheek. The drum becomes her mouth. The dancer, her feet. The fire, her breath. 2. The daughters who dream. There are young women across Jamaica, some in the hills, some in Kingston streets, others in diaspora cities like Toronto, London, Brooklyn, who know her without knowing how. They braid their hair without mirrors. They wrap their heads without tutorials. They speak to water before they bathe, light candles without being taught, fight injustice without waiting for permission. They are not all spiritualists. Some don't call her name, but she moves through them. One girl, abandoned by her family, stood up to an abuser in court and said, "I am not yours. I come from something stronger." Another dropped out of university and returned to her grandmother's village to learn herbs, saying, "Books can't teach me what my bones already know." They are everywhere, daughters of Nanny, bloodbound or not. 3. Moortown as Living Temple. Today, Moortown is more than a village. It is a living archive, a repository of ancestral technology, ritual, resistance, spiritual ecology, and survival. There, elders still speak in patois laced with Ashanti echoes. Children still learn the Abang horn, blowing signals across the hills just as their forebears did during ambushes. The mountain trails are still mapped in memory, not ink. Ceremonies are not for tourists. They are for time travel. When a new child is born, the elders wash them in river water and ash. They whisper the names of ancestors into the baby's left ear and Nanny's name into the right. When a member passes, the drums are played not in mourning, but as a map for the spirit to follow. The people here do not visit graves. They walk with the dead. And Nanny, she never left. For a spirit in resistance. Nanny's legacy isn't just a spiritual symbol. It is a political weapon. Her spirit has been invoked in every major maroon land dispute with the Jamaican government. Every time the state tries to encroach on sacred territory, mining projects, road development, so-called progress, the people return to her flame. They chant her name at protests. They place red cloths on trees marked for destruction. They hold sacred fire vigils and vow. Nanny's land cannot be sold. It was bought with blood, not coin. When police threaten to intervene, the elders remind them that Moortown has its own governance, predating Parliament. And when outsiders laugh, the warriors blow the A-bang. Suddenly, the mountains remember. The birds fly differently. And even lawmen feel something move behind their eyes. They leave, quietly. 5. A global ancestor. Nanny's spirit has long since escaped the boundaries of Jamaica. Across the diaspora, she has been embraced as an ancestral archetype, appearing in poetry, dance, activism, and dream. In Brazil's candomblé circles, her name is sometimes spoken during warrior invocations. In Ghana, her story is told beside Yas Santuas, two women who held entire empires at bay. In African-American freedom schools, she is included alongside Harriet Tubman and Sojourner Truth as part of the sacred trinity of Black female resistance. At Pan-African conferences, her strategies are studied. Her life has become a case study in guerrilla warfare, spiritual leadership, ecological resistance, and matriarchal governance. Her image adorns murals in Cape Town, New York, Accra, and Brixton. Even those who cannot trace their bloodline to her recognize her in their fire. She has become an ancestral frequency. You tune into her when you fight for what cannot be bought. 6. Lessons that still teach. What does Nanny teach us now, in a world still gasping under the weight of capitalism, racism, environmental destruction, and spiritual disconnection? She teaches that land is sacred, not property, but body. That memory is a weapon. Erasure is colonization. That silence can be strategy, but so can scream. That women can lead armies and heal them. That the spirit world is not superstition. It is science unmeasured. That freedom is not a moment. It is a practice. Her life was not linear. It spiraled like drumbeats, like smoke, like time. And so must ours. 7. The flame continues. There will be children born tomorrow who have never heard her name, but they will carry her anyway. They will plant seeds in impossible soil. They will walk barefoot into battles of bureaucracy and break systems with softness. They will write songs that burn. They will speak truths that sting. They will resist quietly, then all at once. And someone will ask, "Where did you learn to be this free?" They won't know how to answer, but Nanny will. From the wind, from the blood, from the whisper of a woman who once caught bullets and gave them back to the earth. She is not gone. She is the drum beneath your ribcage, the shadow in your courage, the prayer in your defiance, the hand on your back when you rise without knowing how. She is still walking, still fighting, still breathing. And if you listen, truly listen, you will hear her say, "Now it's your turn." This is the end of the written story. But Nanny's story has no end, only beginnings, again and again, in every one of us.